This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Find out how the job of McLean County Republican Party chair is almost like being a parent.
All the complaints come to you. You got to sort them out. And when things go the right way, you're the last person to get credit for it.
State Senator Jason Berrickman and other McLean County Republicans talk about how the party is changing. The Bloomington City Council will not be considering a welcoming cities ordinance. It was pulled from the agenda at the request of five aldermen, but aldermen will get an earful from a coalition of groups pushing for the law, affording some protections to the immigrant community. The coalition is asking their memberships to attend tonight's council meeting. You'll hear from the director of the Illinois ACLU and Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner. All of that and a GLT News update on the way. It's February 12th, 2018. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. You may be aware of two big elections coming up this year, the primary in March and the general in November. But there's another one to keep an eye on, in April. That's when McLean County's rank-and-file Republican leaders will choose their new local chair, the face of the party, its loudest messenger, and its biggest fundraiser. GLT's Ryan Denham reports on the many challenges Republicans face this spring as they choose their next leader.
Yes, McLean County Democrats are energized headed into this year's elections, but Republicans know how to win. They hold a 15-5 majority on the McLean County Board. Every locally elected state lawmaker is a Republican, including the Illinois Senate Minority Leader. Every countywide elected official is a Republican, and even in a county with four colleges, President Donald Trump still won here.
Once you start taking something for granted, apathy sets in, and you feel like, well, there's no need to get involved, there's no need to do anything.
That's Connie Beard, a former vice chair of the McLean County Republican Party.
So I welcome a good challenge. I welcome that we can start asking people to wake up and get involved and recognize that if you don't stand and express and vote, then you are going to lose what you have valued.
McLean County Republicans in 2018 will try to fight off one of the most significant electoral assaults they've faced in years, from Democrats stoked by Trump's election and from Libertarians who are on local ballots for the first time. And Republicans will face those challenges while simultaneously picking a new local chair who could reshape the party's future. Chuck Erickson, an attorney and McLean County board member, announced last month that he will not be seeking another term as local GOP chair. Beard, a real estate agent, is running to succeed him. Normal town council member Scott Preston is also considering it. Every political party has factions, and for Republicans, social and fiscal issues are often the dividing line. It's been especially pronounced in the Republican gubernatorial primary, with State Representative Jeannie Ives running that now famous TV ad alleging that Governor Bruce Rauner is not sufficiently conservative on issues like trans rights, abortion, and immigration.
Thank you for signing legislation that lets me use the girls' bathroom.
Thank you for making all Illinois families pay for my abortions.
Ives has stood by the ad, but many mainstream Illinois Republicans have condemned it. In McLean County, where Democrats and Libertarians are trying to make inroads, one question facing Republicans is about inclusivity. Just how big should their metaphorical tent really be?
Party should be reflective of the varying views that exist within the Republican Party on any sort of issues.
That's State Senator Jason Berrickman, a Bloomington Republican.
Allowing differing viewpoints within the party, I think, is healthy. I think it's a reflection of the actual views that exist among rank-and-file members.
Berrickman is a prominent moderate voice among local Republicans. He was one of the GOP's lead negotiators on school funding reform in Springfield last year. In 2013, he was the lone Republican senator to vote in favor of same-sex marriage. He said he did so only after getting an amendment added that protects religious freedom. 2 months ago, Berrickman broke with Rauner and said Republicans should be open-minded about legalizing marijuana in Illinois. Berrickman says the next McLean County Republican Party chair should focus on energizing his or her members while uniting on principles such as limited government and individual personal freedoms.
When we engage with local Republicans, making sure that we focus on the issues that unite us and not the ones that divide us. That makes us stronger.
Social issues can be especially divisive. Erickson, who's been party chair since 2014, is an ardent and unapologetic supporter of Republican causes. His self-described outspoken and unashamed advocacy occasionally put him at odds with other local Republicans. Last summer, he issued a statement to clarify his remarks on the Republican Party's Facebook page about President Trump's now infamous both sides comment on Charlottesville. That's continued in the months since. In November, on the party's Facebook page, Erickson shared a post from the Illinois Family Institute criticizing GLT for its coverage of the Institute's robocalls on the Equal Rights Amendment. The IFI objected to GLT referring to it as a hate group, a designation it earned from the Southern Poverty Law Center for its anti-LGBT positions. Meanwhile, the Republican Party's Facebook page, run by Erickson, has posted 11 times since January 1st about the NFL and players kneeling during the national anthem. Here's Erickson during an interview with me in December.
I do remind people that on a Republican Party Facebook page, I don't know how to break this to some people, but it's a Republican Party Facebook page, okay? If you come to a Republican Party Facebook page, you really should expect to see articles that Republicans are going to agree with more often than not. I don't tell the Democrats that you should post Republican articles on your page. And so it always fascinates me that some people think that, well, you can't post Republican articles on a Republican Party Facebook page. Well, what would I post? I mean,
I think that's fair. But there's Republican Party content, and then there's Illinois Family Institute content.
Well, I think,
and there's definitely a line there, right?
Yeah, I think there's some line, but I mean, I'm not going to say that all Republicans agree with the Illinois Family Institute. But I think it's fair to say that more Republicans agree with the Illinois Family Institute than disagree. I mean, you have factions in every party. You have factions in the Democrat Party. You have factions in the Republican Party. I mean, you got factions in the Democrat Party that are very far left with Bernie Sanders. You have other factions in the Democrat Party that say, you know, we need to be more in the middle, okay? You have those same factions in the Republican Party, but it's usually the factions that say we need to be further to the right, and you got factions in the Republican Party that say we need to be more in the middle. You can't change that in a party. It's always going to be there. I mean, the only goal you can try to accomplish is, hey, guys, in Republicans, you say, hey, there's more things that we agree on than we disagree on.
John Parrott was chair of the McLean County Republican Party before Erickson. He said the next chair should embrace the Republican Party platform fully, including social issues like abortion.
That issue and some of the other social issues and so forth is what really brands the Republican Party as being different than the Democrat Party.
On the other end of that argument are Republicans like Pat Brady, a former Illinois GOP chair who butted heads with social conservatives in 2013 over his support of gay marriage.
The sole purpose of the party is to get your candidates elected. It's not a debating society.
Parrott famously called for Brady's ouster over gay marriage.
The my way or the highway when running a party doesn't work. You need to appeal to a broad group, but you also got to keep in mind, and you got to be a little forward-looking on where the electorate is going. Not to compromise your principles, but young people on these social issues don't care. They are more concerned with fiscal issues, where they're going to get a job, how they're going to pay down their student loan debt. The social issues are far less important. I'm not minimizing those, but you got to realize that it's not 1950 anymore, and we need to be a party of 2020, you know, not 1955. And I think some of the ideologues get caught up in that, and then the effect of it is we lose elections.
That deeply conservative strain of Republican is most noticeable in rural McLean County. Trump actually lost Bloomington-Normal to Democrat Hillary Clinton in 2016, but he still narrowly won the county as a whole by around 1,000 votes because of how well he performed in rural precincts, picking up 70 to 80% of the vote in some places. Yet there are signs of a shift in the county's political makeup. Trump won a smaller percentage of overall McLean County voters, about 45%, than both 2012 Republican nominee Mitt Romney and 2008 nominee John McCain. Here's Trump during a 2016 visit to Bloomington's Central Illinois Regional Airport during the presidential primary.
Do we love Illinois? We love Illinois.
There are other signs, too. During the 2016 primary, nearly 40% of those voting took a Democratic ballot, more than twice as many as in the 2010, 2012, and 2014 primaries. The Republican share of primary voters dropped from 87% in 2012 to just 60% in 2016. McLean County is also becoming more diverse. The county added 22,000 residents between 2000 and 2016, but the percentage of those who are white has dropped from 89% to 84%. White rural voters are more likely to vote Republican. Democrats are trying to seize on this. 11 of 13 county government races are contested in 2018, and two longtime GOP state lawmakers, Dan Brady and Keith Summer, face their first challengers in years. Democrats also sense an opening with Rauner, one of the most vulnerable Republican governors in the country. During 2014 to 2016, Democrats had filled only 23%, less than a quarter, of all their precinct committeeman slots. Today, they have two-thirds filled, more than the Republicans. McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael says the world is different now. She says each year, each decade, sometimes each day brings a new challenge and a new headline. She says in a statement that the Republican principles, quote, should be and will be preserved, including national strength and pride, a desire for peace and freedom, and the extension of human rights throughout the world. Michael is a Republican, and she herself faces a Democratic challenger in November, Nikita Richards. Is there a true shift happening? Michael says we'll know come November. Come April, Republican precinct committeemen will pick their new chair. So far, Beard and Preston are the only two possible candidates for chair. Beard studied communications and theater in college. She appears focused on the messaging.
I would love to see us having more conversations that, although I am an ardent conservative, I hold fast to principles that are just as conservative as Chuck and John Parrott and those that have come before me. But I have a little bit different approach to sharing those principles with other people. I like to hear people's hearts. I like to hear what they think, what they're thinking. I like to connect with people on a level that can really make a lasting impact and a change. And some people may think that's not going to make a mass difference in the world, but it may not. It may only affect a handful of people that I can come in contact with. But that's okay, because if I can come in contact with a handful of people and make a difference and win them to what I think are sound conservative principles, then they in turn can go out and contact and convince other people.
Preston is currently a party vice chair and has not yet decided whether to actually run for chair. He says he'd focus on building up the party's infrastructure and cultivate a farm team that would become the next generation of candidates in local races.
Republicans and people who think Republican and vote Republican, there's so much more that unites us than divides us. And that, that focus and that standpoint overcomes all else when you're talking internally about the party.
When asked by GLT how much distance the McLean County Republican Party should put between itself and the polarizing, unpopular Trump, the response from Republicans was generally the same. Let's focus instead on local and state issues. Here's Berrickman, the state senator.
You know, when you've got local Democrats standing up against local Republicans or legislative Republicans in the state house, and those local Democrats are talking about Donald Trump, obviously they're trying to distract the public from the actual issue of the day, whatever it may be. You know, Trump doesn't have a role in local government. He's got, you know, at best an indirect role in our state government. So I think there's some deflection going on there.
As he announced plans to step down, Erickson touted the party's accomplishments during his tenure. The GOP does hold that 15-5 majority on the county board. And the party's executive committee includes several young Republicans like Preston, a 30-year-old elected official. Erickson also said the party has grown its treasury. And indeed, the McLean County Republican Central Committee has $20,000 in cash on hand as of December 31st. 4 years ago, the party only had about $5,000. Erickson said the next chair will need to motivate Republicans to match the energy level of their Democratic challengers. He also says need to harness sophisticated get-out-the-vote tactics.
They're going to have to be up on technology. They're going to have to be up on what their opponents are doing. They're going to have to be up on a lot of things because it's going to be a very competitive environment going forward.
It's a tough job no matter who gets it. Here's Berrickman again.
Party chairmanship is, I think, one of the most difficult jobs that one can have in politics. I served as a county chair for 6 years over in Champaign County, and I usually told people that my perception of that job is similar to one of being a parent. All the complaints come to you, and you got to sort them out, and when things go the right way, you're the last person to get credit for it.
Republicans also face a newer challenge from the right, the McLean County Libertarian Party. 8 Libertarians have filed to run for county positions in 2018. And voters will be able to pull a Libertarian ballot in the March primary for the first time due to presidential candidate Gary Johnson's strong showing in 2016. Libertarians, too, will have a new local chair in 2018, with McLean County Board candidate Steve Cease hoping to succeed Bennett Morris. The socially liberal, fiscally conservative Libertarian platform is what attracted Lupe Diaz to the party. Diaz, who ran unsuccessfully for Bloomington City Council, has straddled the line between Republican and Libertarian. He's a founder of the McLean County Libertarian Party, but he's also still a Republican precinct committeeman, and technically on the party's executive committee, though he said he's no longer actively involved. Diaz says one reason he stepped away from the GOP is because he was passed over for a McLean County board vacancy last year. Ryan Scritchlow eventually got that seat. Diaz also supports decriminalization of marijuana and gay marriage.
My belief is, you know, the government shouldn't be in our bedroom while they're not wanting it. I mean, basically, that's what it comes down to, like gay marriage and all that. You know, I've supported that forever, you know. And when it comes to abortions and stuff like that, it shouldn't be government's business to dictate any of that stuff.
For the future, Diaz says the GOP should actively recruit more people of color and focus on local issues like municipal budgets and streets.
We focus too much on like what Donald Trump is doing every day. We don't get anything accomplished, and most people don't realize the local government has a lot of effect on our daily lives and what Donald Trump is doing in the White House.
Midterm elections are notoriously bad for the sitting president's party, meaning it won't be a shock if Republicans lose big locally, statewide, or nationally. Local Democrats like Eric Rankin, who's vying to become the next chair of the McLean County Democratic Party, says it'll be important to get activists more involved by having them serve on committees or host events. I asked Rankin, will local Democrats be able to turn their 2018 electoral gains into a permanent shift?
That's the million-dollar question.
I'm Ryan Denham.
Find more local election news on GLT's new Facebook group. Just search for Election 2018 in McLean County. The primary is March 20th. You're listening to Sound Ideas on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Support for GLT comes from Luther Oaks, now offering short-term stays and assisted living up to 30 days for supervision following minor injury, illness, or surgery, or for families or caregivers who are going out of town or need a break. Details at lutheroaks.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Okay, so we're in a world where it seems that a month of breaking news now happens every day.
Used a vulgar slur in reference to
injured in a school shooting in Western
Kentucky. Open prompting a shutdown on
Larry Nassar will spend at least 40 years in prison.
An Amtrak train has crashed.
An emergency alert that there was.
Morning Edition is with you every day to slow down the news, make sense of it all, ask what really matters. Listen every day.
Here, Morning Edition, Monday through Friday, now starting at 4 a.m. on GLT.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping investors plan for the future and stay on track for retirement and college savings based on their unique situations and goals. Details at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. A potential welcoming cities ordinance in Bloomington continues to strike sparks. Disclosure of nearly 200 pages of emails between the Bloomington Police Department and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has given both sides in the public debate ammunition. The Keep Family Together Coalition points to four emails in particular as evidence Bloomington police are shopping immigrants to the federal government. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Tom Cullen of the American Civil Liberties Union and Don Carlson of Illinois People's Action about those emails.
The four circumstances or cases that we discovered through the FOIA were individuals in Bloomington that were not committing criminal offenses or had been charged with anything criminal, but were people who the Bloomington Police Department took it upon themselves to communicate with Trump's enforcement force, which is ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, on whether or not they would be interested in this person. And the only interest that ICE has is in deportation of people. So this came as not something that is unknown to the immigrant community in our work over the last 10 years on immigration issues in the community. But this is the first time that we have clear evidence and proof that there is cooperation and communication between ICE.
So does that qualify in your view as what the aldermen say has not happened, that the BPD has not turned anyone over to ICE?
It's even worse than that. We were told, the community was told back in December, in a meeting attended by 350 people who want a welcoming city ordinance, by the police chief, that there is not this kind of cooperation. And then we were told in the letter that you're referencing by council members Painter, Malambwe, Sage, Bray, and Schmidt that this cooperation is not happening. But nobody took the time to check. Somehow a mythology got created and everybody started to repeat it. But when we checked, we found that there were four lives and four families that were impacted, not just yesterday or the day before, but going back as far as 2015, 2015, 2016, and 2017.
Is this an example of one particular officer or two that has a relationship with ICE, or is, Tom Cullen, this a broader pattern of conduct within the department?
Well, the results of our FOIA request yielded 194 pages of email communication back and forth, redacted significantly, but there was a fairly collegial environment of exchanges back and forth between officers in the Bloomington Police Department and these ICE agents. And so there were, rather familiar relationships there. And there was extensive communication.
That in itself is not bad.
Well, what we had brought out at the discussion in December, particularly by Alderman Black, was this idea that there were matters that the Bloomington Police Department needs to communicate with, I think he said, sort of good ICE, and then that there were matters that we were, with our welcoming city ordinance, were saying that we didn't want communicated in terms of deportation of non-criminals, and that this might be referred to as sort of bad ICE, that there's this need to communicate with ICE on some matters. And we did see some of that in there on issues where there were victims of crimes.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Tom Cullen and Don Carlson of Illinois People's Action and the Keep Families Together Coalition. So how should this shape your efforts to get a welcoming city ordinance passed?
The core of the Welcoming City Ordinance and the mission and the reason that the coalition of many nonprofits who got together to create the Keep Families Together campaign coalition was so that we could really do three things in our community based on what we all see every day coming out in the media on how Donald Trump is waging war on both legal immigrants and undocumented immigrants. And that would be that we would create trust between the immigrant community and the Bloomington police so that when indeed there were crimes committed, that the immigrant community would feel that they could communicate with the police and share that information without the anxiety that if I talk to the cop, am I going to somehow get to ICE, or is ICE going to come and find me? The second rationale with that was that why would we spend our tax money doing something that the federal government and the Department of Justice and Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump want to do in our community that we would argue that the vast majority of Bloomington residents don't want? And the third reason is perhaps the most important, to try to create the kind of community that we all want to live in. Dr. King called it the beloved community. And that's one where everybody gets a fair shake and everybody gets to live and enjoy our community and not live under fear. So our hope is that now that we have really proof that some bad, very bad things have been happening for the last 3 years, that we can come together and say that we have to draw some lines between how the Bloomington police communicates with Trump's ICE enforcement group enforcement organization, and that we're going to allow things that keep us safe, but we're not going to turn in the waiter who may be undocumented, or we're not going to turn over the minor who may be undocumented.
Yes, let's unpack those four instances. What bad things in specific are you talking about?
We found at least four instances over the last 3 years where Bloomington police, in the majority of cases, and in one case I believe ICE communicated with Bloomington, regarding behavior of people that the police thought may be undocumented but had committed no crime, but were curious whether or not ICE, and using their words, and it's paraphrased in the four examples, would be interested in them. One of the circumstances was a minor who left home, was placed on the missing person list. The Bloomington police is trying to discover that she's become a majority now, I think maybe with the boyfriend, tries to remove her from the list. So far, so good. And then makes the comment to ICE, but this person is illegal. Are you interested in them? Another circumstance is what we believe is an ISU student who may have changed visas, educational visas, was working at a restaurant, supposedly or allegedly perhaps being paid under the table. And all of this information in about 4 pages of emails was conveyed to ICE. And the Bloomington police inquired whether or not ICE would be interested in this person.
And did ICE take them up on any of those proffers?
Well, as Tom said, all of these 190 pages, much of it has been redacted. And so we don't know what the back and forth is in all circumstances. We also don't have phone logs either, or transcripts of those phone conversations. We just have the emails. So we only have part of the conversation. In the one circumstance of the ISU student, I believe ICE goes as far as to say, until such time as the laws changed, it appears this person hasn't committed a crime, and therefore we're not interested in them. So just the mere back and forth is disturbing and shows what we believed all along.
Generally, you want one government agency to have a good relationship with another government agency. If 198 pages shows a collegial relationship and maybe 10 pages and 4 instances over 3 years shows problematic conduct, is this something that needs a policy?
Well, we've been hearing these kind of stories all along in the community. And just like the phenomenon that seems to have happened in the last few years with the advent of mobile phone technology with cameras and video recorders, now those things are hitting social media and they go viral. And now there's more credence given to the stories that have been coming out of, you know, minority communities about mistreatment at the hands of police. This is one of those circumstances where now we have some FOIAs. And so all of these stories that we've heard from the community over the years, where there may not have been, the type of hard evidence that aldermen are looking for, that we're able to dismiss, well, now we have examples of that. And so I see these four examples in the FOIA for just the period that we've seen and just the information that they turned over that was unredacted as evidence for many other stories that are in the community.
If there are these other stories, will a policy make a difference in the public mind? Will the fear that is being talked about in the immigrant community be at all affected by a policy and an ordinance?
I think it's a strong argument for the ordinance, and it's an argument for a strong ordinance to demonstrate to the residents in our community that there is this clear line between matters of concern to Bloomington Police Department, where there's a victim of a crime, and matters that might be of concern of federal immigration authorities, where there's a civil violation that someone didn't fill out some paperwork the correct way.
Don Carlson?
And this conversation doesn't take place in isolation from the rest of the world. Every single day, we read stories and we hear stories about how Donald Trump's ICE is having agents on Amtrak trains asking for papers, raiding 7-Elevens, increasing deportation of non-criminal undocumented residents by 200% over the previous administration, threatening to arrest city officials who are part of so-called sanctuary cities. And this is just the start. This is only 1 year into this administration. And so where we can create safety and trust, we think it's the obligation of our community to do it.
The aldermen in their email said that the version that of the proposed ordinance that arose from Chief Brendan Heffner and City Attorney Juergens putting their heads together resulted in something that really would make no difference at all. It would be just an affirmation that they follow federal law. The other day, in a conversation about the email itself, Don, you said you agreed. There's no point in passing an ordinance that just recognizes the status quo. Illinois People's Action and the Keep Families Together Coalition has now been working on another draft of a possible ordinance that you're hoping to get before the five aldermen who are showing a lack of interest in the ordinance. What provisions does that have in it?
Well, fundamentally, what we have codified into the ordinance was that nothing that the city would do would be against federal law. And for the lawyers, that's Section 1373 of the Federal Code. That does allow some communication between ICE and all governmental units in the country. And so we respect that and highlight that. We also respect the recently passed state law that many of us worked on called the Trust Act, so that in Illinois now, people cannot be arrested solely based on citizenship status or immigration status. Where our ordinance goes beyond that and supports those two important laws is we will not allow the Bloomington Police and ICE to work cooperatively to share information such as, are you interested in this person for non-criminal behavior? And we've made what we think are two important carve-outs, one for human trafficking and the other for sex trafficking, where there clearly are victims in our community. And we want to be able to use all the means at the disposal of law enforcement to make our community safer and to protect victims. That is a compromise that we've worked hard on and listened thoughtfully to the comments of the council at the BCPA back in December.
Is it important that perhaps only a few officers are responsible for these instances that you found?
Well, I think that, first of all, there are personnel changes all the time. And secondly, when there is that collegial atmosphere and relationship that develops among any working group of human beings, they would be better served by having a clear, bright line from the top down, from the council through to the department, saying that this is something that you cannot do. And then they will know that, and they can also cite that as reasons for why they are, you know, denying a request or for reasons for not initiating that contact.
And let's remember how we got here. We got here because the Bloomington police chief said none of this communication ever took place. They were not engaged in this behavior. And five members of the city council said, we're not engaged in that. That's not who we are. That's not what we do. But the fact of the matter is, over the last 3 years, that's exactly what they have been doing. So it's not about personalities. It's not about more training. It's not about finger pointing, taking away somebody's vacation time. It's about policies. And either this city is going to stand up, protect all immigrants, or it's not.
And right now, the status quo is it doesn't. And that can change. And that changes through politics. And that's going to take five members of the city council to support a welcoming city ordinance.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Tom Cullen and Don Carlson are members of Illinois People's Action and the Keep Families Together Coalition. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Bloomington aldermen will likely get an earful from members of the Keep Families Together Coalition at this evening's council meeting. Illinois People's Action says they've begun the FOIA process with the town of Normal to request possible email communication with ICE, but have only preliminary results in that request. It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Bloomington police are denying anything untoward in the communications between investigators and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Police Chief Brendan Hefner.
A working relationship like we have with other agencies, be it ICE, be it FBI, be it Secret Service, be it DEA, we have to have these types of relationships.
So is it a good one?
Yes, I'd like to think it's a good one. I've not heard of any complaints.
Do you believe this conflicts with your representations at the December public meeting, that contacts are infrequent and only for significant criminal matters?
No, because what I was basically talking about, because I referred to it then as well, is I was talking about officers out on patrol contacting ICE or doing that on a regular basis, i.e. asking people for driver's license, proof of insurance, immigration status, or when we go handle cases. I also made it very clear, though, that when we are working cases, things where we might need information from them as a resource, we would reach out to them, and that they do reach out to us.
You did say in the forum that we're not sending people to them to be deported. But in at least one of the emails, a Bloomington staffer said, anything you can do on this guy. That does seem like you're sending them people.
First of all, ICE is just not only for deportation purposes. ICE is part of the Marshals Task Force. They have people in DEA task forces, and they might want to open up their own investigation or provide us information. I don't think there's anything in any of those emails where it says specifically that we want people deported. That you can look at things, and from what I see in the different notes, people are trying to insinuate a lot of things, and you can insinuate all you want. You would have to prove something. And
Illinois People's Action is highlighting four specific emails out of the 198 pages of FOIAs. First off, your reaction to that ratio.
Well,
four versus 198 pages, or about six pages versus 198.
I believe that speaks for itself, in that out of 198 pages, they are concerned about six pages. I believe that literally speaks for itself. And from what my review is, and in speaking with our intel unit in regards to the law, I think only in one case or one email possibly where we had a request for some information in regards to a domestic violence incident, anything that has been done does not violate the Trust Act that was just passed in August, even back to 2014.
They're saying that an instance involving a missing person, another involving a traffic stop at which no contraband was found, a third a request from ICE for current address information to the BPD without other criminal activity involved, and the fourth involving a person on a student visa who may have violated the terms of his visa, who might be working at a restaurant and being paid cash under the table, that those create fear in the immigrant community and that those kinds of incidents are already known and make the immigrant community less likely to call police.
Well,
should those things happen?
In these instances, yes, they should have happened. Our inquiries would have happened. And as long as you have people out spreading fear about certain things as opposed to coming and ask, they will be. I apologize. They should follow up on it. In the incident regarding the missing person, we had a missing person case. We had information that the missing person was not a legalized citizen and had been assigned to a family. We thought that ICE, if they were going to look for the person, or we were checking to see if they had any information on them, that that would be a resource to help locate them. ICE never contacted our detective back. We ended up finding this person's mother in Honduras, who told us that the person we were looking for was, in fact, fine and doing well in New York. The only reason that we knew about the status was because of the family. In regards to the person, what was the other one about the eye shoot?
The college student who had transferred from Texas up to this community, ostensibly violating the terms of his visa, and then potentially taking money under the table for working at a restaurant. Are you asking ICE, are you interested in this guy? Well, isn't that shopping someone to ICE?
We are forwarding on to ICE because we don't investigate people taking money under the table. We had nothing to do with that. But I will tell you this, as I recall, the person had received, like registered at one school, received money at one, moved on to the other. These are kind of things that some people have misused funds for and are actively trying to avoid doing things the legal way. So
in December, you said there can be situations where we need to contact a federal agency for information or assistance in an investigation of something serious.
Yes.
Is that something serious, that particular instance?
It could be something serious. I've been in law enforcement. This is my 30th year. Many misdemeanors, many small things have evolved into bigger things. You asked about the traffic stop. When I worked with state police, I worked on a drug interdiction unit. There were plenty of cars and trucks that were stopped, that were searched, or we talked to individuals that, because of information that was given to us, we knew that they had possibly been involved in narcotics trafficking. Just because they didn't have it then, they can have it later. That information is used later. You're putting the pieces together. You have people, and as I recall, specifically with that one, the person had other names. So sometimes when people come to our country, you have people from some countries who have multiple names. Anyone who has worked out here a lot knows that there are some people, and I preface that, some people who will lose their license for traffic violations or other things, even be arrested, and go back later and apply for identification using other parts of their name. The only way we can truly find out who they are is to check different resources. ICE is a resource.
The IPA contends police would be actually more effective because people wouldn't be as afraid to contact them if there were such a policy in place to limit these low-level contacts and only go with the major things like sex crimes, human trafficking, large-scale drug dealing. What's your take on that?
My take is this. First of all, with all due respect to them, they talk about sex trafficking, human trafficking, and these things. First of all, prostitution in this state is a misdemeanor. And if we get involved with human trafficking, as I said before, who do you think we have to work with? ICE. All things.
Well, there would be exceptions for those kinds of crimes, is what they're saying.
But what I'm saying is they think everything has to be a felony. We run across many things that may not be at the felony level that eventually rise at the felony level. So you have to start somewhere, and just a cursory call to an agency, be it ICE, be it DEA, be it FBI, That's what you're doing when you're trying to obtain information. A majority of those 198 pages, the majority of what we contact them about, and we also have a person assigned to the Marshals Task Force, they had emails, narcotics trafficking and felonies.
Can you have an effective relationship, in your view, with an agency like that if you were to limit it only to the clearly demonstrable, immediately apparent serious instances and cut out the ones that may or may not develop into anything serious but initially appear not to be serious?
Well, as I just said, little things can turn to big things, and you've seen nothing in here. I see people insinuating things. You've seen nothing in here that says, check on this person and deport them. If there would have been any language or anything like that, I'm sure that would have been pointed out. But we have a job to do. Public safety is very important and very paramount to people. And whether it be low level, because we think it has a potential to be high level, these are just a couple of things like that student. But I will tell you, people get student loans and sell drugs. I'm not saying that's what this person is doing, but we see things. A lot of times we're trying to identify people who are committing other crimes or potential. We're trying to divert things. So we cannot have any. We have the Trust Act. The Trust Act has laid out the foundation for law enforcement to guide us. It is not a policy. It is the law. And that's what we are doing. And as I said, even with that 198 pages, from what I saw and from what we reviewed, we wouldn't have would not have violated the Trust Act back to 14.
Yeah, they're arguing that the Trust Act doesn't go far enough.
Well, before there was a Trust Act, there was nothing. Now there is a Trust Act. The Trust Act, it hasn't even been enacted for a year for them to determine if it's doing well or if it's not. I will tell you that I've met with a few leaders of different communities from out the country here. One as early as this morning. All they want is to be treated like everyone else. That's what they at. That is basically what they want. You saw a revision that the People's Action would want in regards to the proposed ordinance, not a policy. And in that, it refers to taking a person's immigration status into consideration. We don't ask about that when officers are out there working or responding to something. We don't do that. But I would ask you, so if someone is going to be arrested for something, do I treat a person differently because they may not have the proper immigration status to be here than I would a person who is here legally or a U.S. citizen? All people that I know and some of these other leaders that I spoke to, all everyone wants to do is to be treated the same.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. With us is Chief Brendan Hefner of the Bloomington Police Department. So do you think a more stringent policy created by ordinance would damage the ability of Bloomington Police to cooperate with ICE on higher level cases?
Yes.
A new draft policy is circulating, which would draw a brighter line preventing such low-level contacts as were in most of the email FOIA, and yet carve out exceptions for drugs, human trafficking, and sex crimes against children. Would that pass federal muster? Would that be?
I can't tell you federally, but it would certainly hamper what we do because, as I've said before, you can have something that we start looking at a low level and just simply asking, as you'll see a lot of these, we're trying to identify people. When I spoke to a couple of our officers, one assigned to the Marshal Task Force, one was in the DEA Task Force, we're trying to identify people. What we get called a lot from ICE is sometimes for locations, or if we have cases, because they already have a case on a person. And when they call us, because of clearances at different level and sensitivity of cases, they don't tell us what it's about. And when we call them, we don't necessarily tell them what it's about. It's just a working relationship, and we're just trying to keep the public safe.
Should Bloomington police be saying to ICE, are you interested in this guy?
When necessary, yes.
When is it necessary?
When the circumstances, whatever we have, whatever the circumstances are, yes. They can ask somebody if they are interested in them.
Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Heffner talking with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. Mayor Terry Renner says the emails directly support the case for a welcoming city ordinance to improve confidence among the immigrant community in police actions. You'll hear from Renner during tomorrow's edition of Sound Ideas. The McLean County League of Women Voters has now endorsed a welcoming city ordinance. And the Keep Families Together Coalition has called for a substantial presence at tonight's Bloomington City Council meeting. That meeting was moved back to City Hall from a scheduled location at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. You're listening to Sound Ideas. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal with stories and interviews today from Ryan Denham and Charlie Schlenker. You can find the full show podcast and individual stories and interviews at WGLT.org. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at Facebook.com/WGLTFM. You can even call and leave a message about this program at 309-438-WGLT. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.